Good afternoon, and welcome to the Wednesday afternoon conference call with Trusts Unlimited. This is Jim George speaking. I'm the non-attorney spokesman and facilitator for Trusts Unlimited. I'd like to thank all of you for taking the time to listen to this call, particularly those of you calling in for the first time, and those that will be listening to the replay over the next 24 to 48 hours. We like to move quickly through our calls. Before we get started, I got a little cleanup to do here. For those of you that have been listening for some time, you know over the course of this year we had suspended our full weekly call and dealt specifically with the situation in Iraq because in our view it looked as though the reinstitution of the dinar was imminent. That turned out not to be the case. At the same time, and for the first time on our calls, we felt it necessary to address some of the internal political issues that were going on because they certainly were going to have an effect on how we would be managing this wealth after the revaluation of the dinar and these other currencies. And, of course, what was going on politically affected us in our day-to-day lives. Predictably or mysteriously, we got taken down from YouTube, which was extremely frustrating for us, particularly for me since I'm a history buff, and I'm well aware of the fact that at no time in history were the people censoring others, the good guys. Thought bigotry never works, it's always wrong, and we've been living through it. You know, the Chinese have a saying, "May you live in interesting times." Well, that's kind of a two-edged sword. It's been a rough year for all of us, and hopefully next year will be a much better situation, and hopefully we'll all be done with these weekly calls, and the reinstitution of the dinar and these other currencies will take place, and we can all move on with our lives. That's my hope and prayer, and I'm sure that I share that view with a lot of you. This call is going to be a little different, although it's going to be a full call. I'm going to be wandering around on this call a little bit. I want to touch on a number of things. As I said, we suspended our full calls for some time. And, of course, last week being Thanksgiving, we haven't done a call in 2 weeks. And since I've been eating turkey for the last week, I'm a little tryptophaned out myself. So I'm just going to take a swing at this and see where this goes. But my intention is to try to get a full call in today, which will include a review of what's going on in Iraq, an overview of the turnkey program we put in place to assist you, and then hopefully we can get to a little Q&A. So if we're going to talk about Iraq, let's start with the elections. It's bad enough we had to go through this nonsense in this country. Now we're sort of dealing with it in Iraq, but I think they've resolved things. After the election, there was predictably from the Shia blocs a dozen or so appeals complaining about the result of the election. Those appeals went nowhere. It's my understanding that the federal Supreme Court has ratified the election, that the Sadrists had garnered about 73 seats, which is the majority in parliament, so they will be forming a new government, and they've pretty much made it clear that Al-Kazemi will remain as prime minister. That's all good news for us. There's a movement in a lot of different areas. First, I want to read a short quote from the acting governor of the CBI, Mustafa Galeb, and he stated recently, and I quote, "The 2022 budget and the change in the exchange rate will go hand in hand." So what he's saying there is that so goes the budget, so goes the exchange rate. So that's very good news. We also know that lower dinars either have been or will shortly be in the ATM machines. The National Education Program continues. And one of the aspects of the program states, not to be confused, because once the reinstitution happens, And once the lower denoms are in the ATM machines, that does not necessarily mean that some of the larger denoms will be in the ATMs as well, or still in circulation. And they're making it clear that once the reinstitution happens and there's an exchange rate, the provisional 3-0 currency, you'll be removing the last three zeros. So it's important that the citizens understand that, that, again, points us in the right direction for the reinstitution, at least at a minimum in the short term. Now, Iraq and Turkey have entered into a memorandum of understanding to fight money laundering and money smuggling. Now, we've discussed this on a number of occasions. The deletion of the zeros, I think, is more aptly called the collection of the zeros, meaning they will collect as much of the provisional currency as they can, and then remove the three zeros for what remains, perhaps as little as 2% of the currency, the provisional currency, is floating around out there. But the concern is that some of these nefarious individuals are smuggling the 3-0 currency out of the country with the hope that they can then exchange it after the revaluation for the stepped-up appreciation. And the agreement between Turkey and Iraq has made it clear that that's not going to fly. So that's, once again, another good piece of news and something that had to be dealt with prior to the reinstitution. The Minister of Oil has established something called the Sovereign Energy Fund. What this does is ensure that they have sufficient supplies of petroleum in country in order to keep the price very affordable for their citizens. Now, a price of a gallon of gas is most expensive in the United States. Again, I can't call it the mismanagement of the federal government. It's all intentional. And I said I was going to wander a little bit on this call, but I'm bringing this up because it will indirectly affect what's going to happen to us post-RV. But the strategy is very simple. The fact of the matter is that the renewable, quote-unquote, energies are both ineffective and expensive. So the only way they can make them palatable to the general public and their Green New Deal is to make fossil fuels so expensive that basically you're screwed either way. I mean, there's no other way to say it. That's what these clowns are doing. This is probably why we got taken down from YouTube. But I just, you know, I've always had a hard time with turning the other cheek. You know, I used to box in my youth, and the saying was on the street, start nothing, finish everything. And that's what we're going to have to do. Because, in my view, they're going to try to take this from us, and I'll explain what I mean by that as we get further along the line here in the call. But, again, I'm sorry that I digress. The Minister of Trade, along with the representatives from the UN and the World Trade Organization, have participated in a workshop in order to facilitate and husband Iraq into the World Trade Organization. Once again, totally unnecessary if they don't have a global currency. So we're moving in the right direction on all fronts. The Minister of the Interior is working with UNESCO to promote the rich Iraqi history and culture. Why are they doing that? They're doing that because they want to expand their economic revenue from just the production of oil to industry, agriculture, and tourism. Once again, cannot be accomplished without an international currency. Most importantly, this is a very good sign of a reinstitution to come. We know that Kuwait has made war reparations, that Iraq has made war reparations to Kuwait. And in order to be part of the UN, which is going to be necessary for the reinstitution and revaluation of their currency, they're going to need to be Article 8 compliant with the UN. That means the payoff to Kuwait. Now, in the months of April, July, and October of this year, three payments or tranches were made to Kuwait, the sum total of which were $1.47 billion U.S. dollars. However, there was a notation with the payment, an equivalency of 0.4 billion IQD. So in my opinion, what they're telling us is what the Kuwaiti dinar will be worth after it reinstitutes and then revalues. And this is just an initial rate. There's nothing to keep it from even going higher. But if you do the math, 1.47 billion USD against 4.4 billion IQD means they're estimating the revaluation of the IQD to be $3.67 or 68 cents, which makes sense, which is about where you would think it would start, basically where it was when it was when the dinar went to the program rate. So all of this is very good news on every single front. They're moving inextricably to the reinstitution of their currency. One last thing I want to mention, and then I'm going to get into one other note. All of the contracts, the international contracts for rebuilding their grid, the contract they have with the Saudis for rebuilding some of their oil refineries, they have with the United States, and then, of course, China's in there doing everything they can to, you know, get a piece of the action. That's just who they are. It makes no sense without them having the currency. They can't pay these people in the U.S. dollar because they need the U.S. dollar, the reserve currency they have, to pay all of their employees. So the only solution, the only way they can facilitate and pay for all of this is to to change the exchange rate. And the information we're looking at says they're starting at $3.67 to $3.68. So that's very good news. One last note before we move along in the program here, and as I alluded to earlier about the utter mismanagement that we're experiencing in this country, mismanagement is probably the wrong term, because mismanagement, in my view, just means incompetence. I just don't think anyone could be as stupid as these people, so I don't think what they're doing is incompetence. I think it's on purpose, whether it's the border, whether it's international agreements, whether it's anything you want to mention, whether it's inflation, whether it's the supply chain issues, whatever you want to mention. I mean, I just don't see how you can screw things up this much in such a short period of time. But I wanted to make a note. The first thing the administration did when they came into office was start to shut down pipelines. They then approved a pipeline in Russia. So, you know, you can figure that out for yourself. But in the liberation agreement between the United States and Iraq, the United States was able to purchase oil from Iraq directly. They had an oil tax credit, $36 a barrel. So think about this. The United States has supposedly a shortage of oil due to production lags. So the administration, who on the one hand says we have to stop production in order to accomplish climate change, then begs Russia and other countries, Ukraine and other countries, to increase oil production, which means it's not about climate change. And they're sitting there. They could go to Iraq right now and purchase oil at $36 a barrel, and instead they're willing to pay twice that to countries that are not friendly to us. So something's really wrong at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And if we get taken down for me telling the truth, then so be it. I'm told we're going to be back on YouTube. We'll find out today. But in the event that we are not on YouTube, you can find our calls by going to our website. You would go to trusts with an S, unlimited, LLC.com. That's trusts with an S, unlimited, LLC.com. You would then click the box Learn More. You will then click Conference Calls. And then you can select whatever date or dates you wish to listen to. So this call will definitely be there if it's not on YouTube by tomorrow morning. It should be on YouTube this afternoon, but I give them, you know, 12-hour window. And I'll get up in the morning, and the first thing I'll do is see if it's on YouTube. But there are a lot of sites that have come to us and said, we'd like to put your stuff up. I've said no, but I'm going to go ahead And if YouTube continues this nonsense, then we'll just go somewhere else. I want to give you one quick example. I told you I was going to wander around today. One quick example of how someone circumvented this crap. The pillow guy, my pillow guy, had not a majority, but a substantial piece of his business in retail sales in certain companies. So after he began his election fraud seminars with the information that he had, the peaks and all of that stuff, a lot of the retail companies said they weren't going to sell his product any longer. So his response was just not to turn the other cheek or lay down and take that. What he did was he went to the sources that were willing to at least advertise for him. He substantially increased the advertising he did there, and he dramatically expanded his line of products. So what's going to happen with my pillow guy is he's going to probably double or triple his bottom line by refusing to relent and refusing to concede to these thought bigots. So if that's what we're going to have to do, that's what we're going to have to do. But anyway, you understand where I'm coming from with that. Now, for those of you that are new to the call, Trusts Unlimited has put a turnkey program in place to assist you. And the reason we decided to do this over a decade ago is because we knew that most denarians were middle-class, hard-working people who have never managed a substantial amount of money in their life. And so we decided to put a program together that could help you both pre- and post-RV. Pre-RV to put your assets or put your currencies in the right place to protect them and to provide some preliminary information about that, and then post-RV, all of the product services and professional referrals that we'll be happy to assist you with if you would like our assistance. So let me start by talking about phase one, which is pre-RV, which is the establishment of a package of irrevocable trusts. Now, there are a number of things individuals can do to try to protect wealth. But there is no better asset protection domestically than a package of irrevocable trusts. And I will get into an explanation of why that's the case. But I first want to touch on some of the other things that people can do to protect their assets in some degree. For example, individuals can and have established LLCs and sub-S corporations. And those entities do provide some level of asset protection, but primarily by separating business assets and high-risk business endeavors from personal assets. The problem here is that these currencies are a personal asset. In addition, some courts have ruled that LLCs and sub-S corporations owned in the majority by one person or a closely held group can be pierced for civil litigation. So the LLC and the sub-S corporation are not going to provide the level of protection you're going to need and want. Some individuals have established something called a revocable trust, or a living or loving trust as they're referred to. They're statutory trusts. They're designed primarily to exempt your estate from the cost and delay of probate, and if they're properly structured, can in some cases substantially reduce and even eliminate the federal estate tax. But revocable trusts can provide no privacy or asset protection, so they're not going to be appropriate for your needs. Lastly, some individuals have established an irrevocable trust. See, I'm a little rusty. Now, the irrevocable trust will provide more asset protection and privacy than the other entities that I've just mentioned. But a single irrevocable trust has a flaw too, and it's this. Since all of your assets are housed within that one single entity, any asset within that trust could hypothetically bring all of your other assets and net worth into that litigation as well. So even a single irrevocable trust cannot provide bulletproof protection. The only asset entity that can do so is something referred to as a self-settled, irrevocable trust package. And in addition to the lifetime benefits that they do provide, if you are in a position to acquire a substantial amount of wealth, it's much more advantageous to establish the trust prior to receiving this wealth, or in our case, the revaluation of the dinar and some of these other currencies. And I want to touch very briefly on the such benefits that you would derive from establishing such a trust before the revaluation. First, by establishing our trust package, you will preserve your privacy and your anonymity. Why? Because the assets within our trust package are sealed, meaning that the general public will have no knowledge of your net worth or your actual holdings. So, for example, if someone were to do a background check on you and all of your wealth was in this trust package, they would see nothing. Because when they investigate you, that has nothing to do with the trust. And even if they know you have a trust, they'd need to go to a court and have a legitimate reason to find out what's in that trust. Second, by establishing this trust package, you're going to avoid IRS scrutiny. If you are holding these currencies in direct title, when they revalue, the IRS will probably spit out an audit. And with the potential magnitude of this revaluation relative to your prior year's earnings, you very well might be looking at a full-blown six-year audit. Such an audit would be time-consuming. It would certainly be frustrating because it's come along at the precise time these currencies have revalued, and there's many other things you'd rather be doing than dealing with the IRS. And lastly, the cost of our trust package would be less than the cost of a full-blown six-year IRS audit. In addition, our trust package has included something called a gifting subtrust. Now, what does that mean? If you plan on gifting currencies to family and friends, you're going to need to gift those currencies prior to the revaluation in order to avoid a substantial 40% federal gift tax. Now, if you are gifting to individuals that you have no problem giving them the currency to exchange for themselves, or giving them the USD dollar value after you have negotiated the exchange, that can be accomplished outside of a trust with a standard gift letter. But if you are hesitant for any reason to give these individuals the post-RV lump sum, then you can gift to them through the specially designed gift subtrust as part of our package. Now, because you're gifting through this gift subtrust, their USD will be protected along with yours. In addition, the language of this subtrust allows you to gift up to a certain amount of a currency or currencies, meaning you can give them the exact U.S. dollar amount that you had in mind, irrespective of the exchange rate. And lastly, because this post-RV windfall resides within this subtrust, you will have complete control of those funds, meaning you can manage, invest, and distribute this money to these individuals as you deem appropriate. The fourth reason you'd want to establish this trust package is because it will allow your estate to bypass the cost and delay of probate and the federal estate tax. I'll give you two quick scenarios. Scenario number one, you purchase 5 million dinar for $5,000. The day after that, those currencies revalue for $25 million. The day after that, you pass away, leaving your heirs in a state of $25 million. Now that estate must go through probate, a process that ordinarily can take anywhere from 6 to 18 months. But probate is a public disclosure process, meaning that the general public will be aware of the size of your estate, who your heirs are, and how much each stands to inherit. So anyone that feels they have a legitimate claim against you, your estate, or your heirs can simply file that claim with the probate court. And that could tie the estate up for years, and in some cases, even decades. Then there's something called the federal estate tax. This is the tax that the federal government would assess in order for that estate to be transferred to your heirs. Under current law, approximately $10 million of that $25 million estate would bypass the federal estate tax, but the balance could be taxed as much as 65%. Now, this scenario is not only unacceptable, it's completely and totally avoidable. How? Scenario number two. You purchase 5 million dinar for $5,000. The day after that, you assign those currencies on paper to our asset protection trust package. The day after that, those currencies revalue for $25 million. The day after that, you pass away, leaving your heirs that very same estate of $25 million, but this time protected in our asset protection trust package. As a result, there will be no probate. There will be no public disclosure of your estate. Your heirs will receive their inheritance immediately, and the federal estate tax will be zero, saving your heirs as much as 55% of their inheritance. The fifth reason you'd want to establish this trust package is for some very specific asset protection benefits. One pre-RV, one post-RV. Pre-RV, this trust package will allow you to circumvent something called the Uniform Fraudulent Transfer Act. Now, what does this mean? Under our system of civil procedure, you can only be sued for what you actually own in direct title, or the value of property at the time you transfer it out of title to an entity like our trust package. So let's take the previous example from before. You purchase 5 million dinar for $5,000. You assign those currencies to our trust. They subsequently revalue for $25 million. You begin to live a lifestyle more reflective of your newfound wealth. And a couple of years down the road, someone sees that you're living rather comfortably and decides for whatever reason that they're going to sue you. Well, this prospective plaintiff has a couple of problems. First, he or she better have a very strong case and very deep pockets, because this trust package has been structured in such a way as to make it extremely expensive and extremely time-consuming to pursue civil litigation. But second, and most importantly, once any prospective plaintiff learns that the only thing he could ever win by way of a civil award would be $5,000, the value of the currencies at the time you transferred them out of title and to our trust package, and none of the post-RV value of $25 million, there will be no lawsuit. Post-RV, there's an asset protection benefit I like to refer to as limited liability stop loss. This protects you from future bad acts after you have acquired this wealth. Now, this protection is accomplished through a legal strategy called segregation of assets, and this is why we've established a package of trusts, and this is how it would work. Once again, we'll use the same example. You purchased 5 million dinar for $5,000, transferred the currencies to the trust. They subsequently revalued for $25 million. And now that you have $25 million in trust, you decide to make some purchases. So you purchase a larger primary residence, a vacation home, perhaps a half a dozen rental properties for tax write-off and additional cash flow, a couple of cars, a boat, and let's say an RV. But as you purchase these items, you place each of them in their own separate sub-trust to be managed by your master trust. Now, how does this provide the asset protection we're referring to? I'll give you an example. Let's say one day after the revaluation, you're driving one of your new cars. You have an accident. The accident is clearly your fault, and tragically, someone is seriously injured or even killed. Well, the family of the victim is going to want to sue you. But remember, civil suits are about monetary awards, and you don't legally own anything. So the plaintiffs would be left to sue the owner of the car that you were driving. Well, who owns that car? one of your subtrusts of which you are merely the beneficiary. And what's in that subtrust? Merely that one car and the car insurance policy. In that scenario, the car insurance carrier will negotiate an out-of-court settlement with the victim's family. You will not be involved in those rather unpleasant negotiations. The car insurance carrier will repair or replace your car, making you whole. And this is important. All of your other assets and net worth are safely protected in the other subtrusts. Why? Because those other subtrusts are separate legal entities or persons having nothing whatsoever to do with the accident, and the plaintiff would have no standing to pursue separate legal entities or persons. So your trust package works very much the way a commercial barge would work, where all of the valuable cargo is stored in a series of small compartments. Why? In the event that any compartment is ever breached, the only potential loss would be the cargo in that one compartment. The cargo in the other compartments is safe and secure due to the firewalls, and the barge will never sink. Now, these benefits are lost to you if you do not establish your trust package prior to the revaluation of these currencies. Now, there is one other benefit, and it's this. If you are the holder of one of our pre-RV asset protection trust packages, which is phase one of our program, you will be eligible to participate in phase two. All of the products, services, and professional referrals that will be made available to you. Now, I'll just make mention of one here today. Trusts Unlimited will be sponsoring a post-RV seminar. At present, we plan to have it in Disney World in Orlando, Florida. Now, the only reason that may not happen is because we have this new, quote-unquote, COVID variant. And so Disney's getting a little squirrely about the conventions. If we do not have a convention there or our seminar there, we will be providing a DVD in office to provide all of the information I'm about to share with you. Now, present at that seminar will, of course, be the staff of Trusts Unlimited to assist you with the management and funding of your trust packages. Many of our clients have expressed desires to establish post-RV scholarship funds, foundational trusts, special needs trusts, charitable remainder trusts, and even the more complicated 501c3 nonprofit and offshore trusts. And the proper way to fund those entities is with a direct transfer of funds from your asset protection trust to those newly formed entities. We'll also have our tax specialists there. With this newfound wealth, you're going to need to understand some of the more completely legal but sophisticated tax strategies to legitimately reduce your tax exposure. We'll also have our independent fee-based wealth managers there as well. You're going to want to reposition assets after the revaluation for a number of reasons. First, we know that all windfalls, however large and from whatever source, are lost within 3 to 5 years due to inexperience, mismanagement, and fraud. We also know that with the revaluation of these currencies and the increase in the money supply, financial markets, and particularly with the shift from fiat-based to Basel III-compliant commodities, the financial markets and inflation will tick up, and you're going to want to get money out of the financial markets and into tangibles in order to avoid that volatility. One other thing I will mention, we don't talk about it a lot, but there is a little-known section of the IRS 643B, which says that the exchange or sale of a capital asset within an irrevocable trust is tax-deferred. Now, what that means is that because the IRS refers to the profit from the exchange of these currencies as a capital gain, it's logical to argue that, therefore, they're treating our physical possession of the currency as a capital asset. And if it's a capital asset and you've done the exchange within our trust, it's tax deferred. Now, as I've said many times on the call, I am not saying it's tax deferred. I'm saying that that's the way we read the code. And once the reinstitution of the dinar happens, we're going to try to seek a private letter ruling as quickly as possible to confirm that if the exchange happens within our trust All of the profit from that exchange is tax deferred. Now, there's one other issue, and it's this. The Biden administration wants to substantially increase the capital gain tax, and as part of their Build Back Better they even want to tax unrealized cap gains. If 643B holds up as we understand it, if the IRS confirms our reading of it, and I think it's pretty clear, not only will this trust serve to protect the profit from this exchange, but by placing all of your assets in trust, you would also be able to avoid the tax on the unrealized capital gain, because it only stands to reason. If they can't tax an actual cap gain, how can they tax an unrealized capital gain? So these are all reasons to establish this trust, not only for privacy, not only for asset protection, but potentially for significant tax benefits that may not be available anywhere else. Now, our trust package is initially a package of 10 trusts consisting of one master trust that will hold your assigned currencies pre-RV, and then financial assets like bank accounts and investment accounts post-RV, one gift subtrust, which is an optional trust, which at any time can be converted to a standard subtrust, and then 8 additional standard subtrusts to hold physical assets like homes, cars, boats, etc. Now, this trust package was the simplification of a rather sophisticated trust package that we've utilized in the past for our more fluent clients, a package that had an initial cost of anywhere from $6,000 to $10,000. But when we decided to create a trust package for Denarians, we knew that price tag was going to be simply unaffordable for too many. So by basically back-end loading this thing and simplifying it, we've been able to reduce the cost to $3,000. Now, there are several ways you can pay for that. If you pay us up front, wire us the money, we'll reduce the cost to $2,500, saving you an additional $500. If that's not possible, we even have a deferred payment arrangement. You'd make an initial payment of $525, which sum would basically offset our cost just to produce and deliver your trust package to you. The balance of the $3,000 would then be paid in $100 monthly installments. We will charge no interest. The only proviso is once the dinar revalues, any unpaid balance would need to be paid within 30 days. So with this approach, anyone that has currencies and understands the need for creating their trust package pre-RV should be in a position to afford to do so. One other suggestion, we do accept credit cards. Pay us up front with a credit card. Not only will you get the $500 discount, but the minimum payment on your card would be actually substantially less than $100 a month you'd pay under our deferred payment arrangement. But we will work with you in whatever method works best for you. Our objective is to help you get your trust in force and your currencies assigned to that trust prior to the reinstitution and revaluation of the dinar and these other currencies for all of the reasons that I've stated here. Now, we will be going to Q&A here in just a moment. But for the benefit of our newer callers, I'd like to tell you a little bit about Trusts Unlimited and why we've established this trust package, and hopefully this will help you understand what we've done and why we've done it. Our trust package was authored by our attorney, Robert Bly. He's been a practicing attorney for over 40 years, specializing in the areas of estate planning, asset protection, and offshore planning. I myself hold degrees in political science, macroeconomics, and finance. I've worked in these areas now for over 39 years. And I, along with my clients, were personally involved in the reinstatement of the Kuwaiti dinar in the early 90s. So between the two of us, Robert Bly and I have nearly 80 years' experience working precisely in these areas, and I frankly know of no firm that can make that claim. Now, one of the reasons we wanted to establish this trust and why we were using similar trust even before the advent of the situation with Iraq is to help people protect their wealth. And if you've lived for any length of time, you've either experienced directly in your own life or through friends and family things like unexpected divorce, permanent incapacitation, the onset of dementia, premature death and prolonged and complicated probate processes. Then there are investment losses, business losses, and even bankruptcies. The number two loss of wealth now in the aggregate, courtesy of the information age, is identity theft. But the number one loss of personal wealth remains confiscation through civil litigation. Under our system of civil procedure, anything you own in direct title can be taken from you. And that's why the only thing you can do to manage, protect, and control everything at all times and in all circumstances is to establish a package of irrevocable trusts. But particularly if you have an asset like these currencies that you're anticipating a substantial increase in value. And we at Trust Unlimited will do everything we can to help you accomplish your personal and financial objectives, both pre- and post-RV as we understand them. So again, thanks for listening to the call. We're going to the Q&A in just a moment. If the things we've discussed here this afternoon are of interest to you, if you're seriously interested in understanding how you can retain your privacy, your anonymity, and protect your wealth after this revaluation, I strongly suggest you contact us and get our initial no-obligation package. It includes everything you need should you decide to proceed with the establishment of a trust package. But again, it's completely optional. There's a lot of information there. I strongly suggest you read through it all. Contact us by email, and I'll give you that information in a second, or by phone. We'll be happy to answer any questions you may have. There will be no consultation fees. Now, let me give you our contact information, and then we'll go to the Q&A. Well, let me open the Q&A first. Okay, and while I'm waiting for any potential calls, I want to give you our contact information. You can go to our website, which is trusts with an S, unlimitedllc.com. That's trusts with an S, unlimitedllc.com. Our email address is trusts with an S, unlimitedllc@gmail.com. And our phone service is 307-274-4122. Lastly, if you want to listen to our replay or if you'd be kind enough to share this with an individual, you go to our website, which is, again, trusts with an S, unlimitedllc.com. You click the box Learn More. Then you click Conference Calls, and then you select whatever date or dates you'd like to listen to. So let's go ahead and see who we've got here in our call. Our first caller is area code 208. That's 208. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Jim. Yeah, I've talked to you before on the phone. Question I have is you alluded earlier in this presentation that there may be forces at work to try to thwart apparently the redemptions. Could you speak any more about that at all, if that's the case?
Okay. That was probably a little strongly worded. I'm not in a good mood today because of some of the things I'm learning about what's going on in Washington. One of the things they could do is they could try to rescind Executive Order 13303. I don't think that's going to fly because there's a lot of us. We've been involved in this a long time. And frankly, a lot of politicians, including Democrats, are denarians. So I don't think that's going to happen. Another thing they can do is try to sneak in some sort of a special windfall tax to incorporate things like this revaluation. A third thing they could do is go to the banks and tell them that they're going to annuitize all of these redemptions. I'm not saying any of that's going to happen. I'm just saying, and 12 months ago, I would have never said this, but after what we've been through the last year, I just don't trust these folks. And so I just wanted to point out that that's one of the things I'm a little concerned about.
Okay, thanks, Jim. Also, sure. If you don't mind, could I ask you, I was watching a YouTube video actually about trust, and this gal that was talking said something to the effect that she said that you didn't want like your direct first and last name on the title of the trust. So I was thinking, you know, if I decide to do this, have to come up, I guess, with some name for our trust for my family. Is that true, or does that make any sense?
Well, let me say a couple things. First of all, I have the George Family Asset Management Trust and the George Family Gift Trust. Now, we've gotten some strange requests from people. We've had people that want to create, because they've heard similar things, they want the Knick-Knack Paddywhack Trust. They want nothing to my ex-wife trust. They want nothing to the IRS trust. And, of course, we won't touch any of those types of things for obvious reasons. But the reason that's sort of irrelevant is if you are ever, even if you name your trust your own name, if someone does a background on you, they're not going to pull up the trust because the trust has a different ID number. It's not going to come up. But if you're ever in civil litigation, any attorney, I don't care if he passed the bar and the ink is still wet on it, he's going to ask you, are you the settlor, grantor, trustee, or beneficiary of any trust? And you're going to have to be truthful. It's not the name of the trust that protects you. It's the terms of the trust. So, as I said, my trust is named, you know, the George Family Asset Management Trust. If someone does a background check on Jim George, that'll never come up. If someone sues Jim George and asks me, I'll tell them, yeah, the trust exists. Good luck going to court and trying to pierce it.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Okay, our next caller is area code 619. That's 619. Go ahead.
Hey, Jim. Good morning. Eddie here. And I've got a question for you with regards to the gift trust. You know, I've heard you explain it in the way that you explain it, but I'd like to see if you'll expand on that one as well.
Okay.
So having the trust and having not gifted yet any currency to, say, a family member or an individual, how much can you go up to in gifting out of the gift trust, and how would you go about it in
okay.
that process?
When someone applies for our trust package, one of the questions is, do you want to create a gift trust? And all you have to do is give us a name. When you give us that name and you receive your trust package, you'll have the master trust. You'll have the 8-blank gift trust that will be funded post-RV, and then you'll have your gift subtrust, all right? And along with that gift subtrust will be a document referred to the minutes of the meeting gifting letter. And you will be instructed to list the people you're gifting in that subtrust and how much currency you're going to gift them. As long as those documents are executed, the gift trust along with the master trust are in force and you have recorded the gift pre-RV. Now, there's another document that comes with your trust package. It's called the exchange protocol if you have a trust. And basically what it says is this. When you go to the bank to do your initial exchange, you will take, of course, all of the documents that you would need, even if you didn't have a trust, but you will take the master trust with you to the bank. You will not take the gift subtrust in. They don't know it exists. It's none of their business. All right? So you'll take only the master trust and those 3 bank documents that are in the instructions. After you've negotiated your exchange, after the USD will go into the trust bank account that will be established that day at the bank, you will go back a week or so later after that money is available for you to withdraw, and you will establish the gift subtrust banks for those individuals, and you will transfer money from your master trust bank account. So if you've given everyone, if you've given 5 people $1 million and you exchange the currencies for $1, you will transfer $1 million to each of those 5 accounts. At that point, if you want to set up investment accounts, you decide how you want to invest the money, if you want to give them any lump sum initially, if you want to, whatever you want to do. But that's how it would work.
And just to be clear, when you said recorded, that was notarizing the document? Is that the only recording that's needed?
Well, when you get your trust, you have to execute the documents to put the trust in force. But what I was referring to about the bank is that you go back with the gift subtrust after the money that went into the trust bank account is available for withdrawal. In other words, it's a lot easier, you know, it's the Jed Clampett effect. Once you can take your money and leave that bank, then they get very cooperative. As opposed to walking in the bank with all of this stuff the day of the exchange, you're just going to confuse them.
Yeah, no, I get that, and I've done that. You stated something to the effect that, assuming that you had this document recorded, and I want to just make sure that you're talking about recorded meaning by notary signatures.
What I meant by recording is you operate under your Social Security. The trust will operate under its EIN number. So if someone does a background check on you with your social, that will not pull up the EIN number.
Okay, gotcha.
Right.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you, and thanks for all the information and hard work you put into providing us the information. You're awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Our next caller is area code 801. That's 801.
Jim, how are you today?
Clay?
Yes.
How you doing?
Fine. Yourself?
Okay. I'm sure you got a technical question for me. I'm going to have to think hard.
Well, I don't know how technical it is, but I'm glad you opened up the Q&A because there's a lot of people, I'm sure, that have questions that have wanted to ask them, but you've been very busy, so I appreciate you doing that. One question I wanted to ask you, first of all, is when you go to your website and you look, go to the Learn Now, whatever the situation is, the information is always 2 weeks old. So this call, in my experience, I won't be able to listen to for at least 2 weeks because it's not posted.
Okay.
And the other issue is my phone went dead in the middle of this call, and you were talking about Governor Kalib and how the rate is going to parallel the budget. And then I missed a lot of it after that. And I want to review that information.
I'm going to give you that. First of all, I'm going to check this out. My understanding was that the call goes up later that day. If you're telling me they're delaying it 2 weeks, then I'm just going to have to kick some doors down because I'm really getting to the point now where it's just not acceptable. If I have to do it myself, my contract is, I tell you what, I will take this on. You're going to pay me X more to do it, or we're going to have a problem. So I'm going to try to fix that when we get off this call. Now, what I said was, the governor of CBI made a statement, and he said that the passage of – this is – I'm quoting what he said. The passage of the budget and change in the exchange rate will go hand in hand. That's the statement he made. Now, the only thing that could mean less than what we hope it means is that the exchange rate is going to change very incrementally. But once again, I also pointed out – that they are referring to the reparations payments, they're equating it to $3.67. So let me put it to you this way. Even if they do it incrementally, when they pass the budget, they're going to have to put a number in there. So the government's going to have to play that stupid game where they don't make any payments for 2 or 3 months, so they don't make them at the lower rate. If they try to make payments incrementally, it's going to be a mathematical an actuarial nightmare for him. So I'm hoping that they're either going to come out at, the, say, approximately 367, or if they don't come out with it right away, they're not going to make any governmental payments until they kick in at 367. So, you know, we'll just have to see how that works out. But when the governor of the CBI makes a comment like that, it's something to sit up and take notice of.
Well, it seems to me that if they're going to come out with those reforms, which are supposed to be in the 22 budget, they've already determined what the rate needs to be in order to go international to comply with those MO, what do they call them?
A memorandum of understanding.
If it goes incrementally, that would simply mean that maybe some of those reforms don't require the funds necessitated to do that. But I would think that if it goes incrementally, some of those reforms are only in-country to begin with because they can't go international and work with all these Western and European countries without having an international currency.
On the other hand, as they worked through the UN to make reparations payments, that's exactly what they did. They paid them with a currency that's not – they paid them in U.S. dollars, but they're already telling us what the currency's value is going to be. So it's confusing because it's just the way they operate. I mean, we're dealing with a culture that's been sectarian and tribal for a millennia, okay? So it's just a tough slog. But I agree with you. I see no way they can function to do the things they say they're going to do without an international currency. They can't do what they say they're going to do.
Jim, you said that your intel indicates that Khadib, whatever the fellow's name is, said the rate would be in line with the budget. You also said that Khadimi, it looks like Khadimi is staying in office. I'm thinking him being a former CIA agent, what have you, he's working under the lines with Sauder and maybe even Tassalib.
Yeah.
But my question is where did you get that intel? Because I haven't heard that anywhere else.
Well, I have people that over the years I've gotten to know, and I just make a few phone calls. And if I get a little piece of information, I'll check it with someone else. And when two or three people kind of agree or they think that's the way it's going, then I kind of feel comfortable telling you. And, it's unfortunate. I wish I could say, hey, I was there. And this, I'm relying to some degree on third parties. But there are people that I think have given me good information. There are people that 5 years ago when everyone was in a five-day window were laughing and saying, Jim, you're looking at years. And they turned out to be right. And a lot of people still listen to these guru guys that, like I said, they've been in a five-day window for 10 years.
Do these people that you're working with have inroads directly in Iraq with officials or people in the CBI in Iraq that are giving them this information directly, or is it just their opinion?
Both. Some of them have direct contact with individuals. Some of them get it secondhand as well, which is why if one person tells me something, I don't run with it. I kind of check around, say, such and such told me this, such and such told me this, and they don't even know each other. So it's, if they're
so
all
you
guys
compare
that know
their
each
information,
other,
you compare their information to see if the intel is the same.
Yeah, like I say, if someone gives me a piece of information that I think is really good or really bad, and I only get it from one person, then you won't hear it from me. I have to hear it from more than one person. That still doesn't mean it's correct. It just means that, we can't predict the future. We can only, deal with the information at hand. And so when people that have given me good information in the past, more than one, give me a piece of information, I share it with you. But I'm not the Oracle of Delphi. I'm not saying, because Jim said it, this is the way it's going to happen. I'm telling you,
okay,
giving you my best guesstimate based on people who have in the past been correct.
Okay. Some people think that Iraq's annual year is the end of the year, calendar year. Some think it's a fiscal year. Either way, between January and March, that's a three-month window, whether one or the other. Last year, they passed the budget off to Parliament right around the 6th or 7th of January, when it was approved at the end of March. That
right.
Same thing could occur this year. What I'm getting at is, this is.
I know where you're going.
I want to know if you concur with this. It would make sense to leave Khadimi in there. He's only been in there maybe a year. He's done a great job. He's already established his cabinet, which means we don't have to deal with that. The people that were corrupt were the ones in Parliament. Who knows? We might get a few of them back, but chances are it's going to be better than it was. So if they leave Khadimi in there, if they leave the president in there, this government could be formed within the next 15, 20 days.
Okay, now I'm just going to give you my opinion. My opinion is the only thing that could stop it at this point is either some X factor that we have that's not on the screen right now, or the few remaining people for their own selfish or political reasons trying to stop it. And I just don't see that. Now, yes, we've been in this so long, but, I mean, everything's done. Everything is done. So the only holdup can not be for a good reason.
Okay,
and
that makes sense.
It's possible, but you know, if I had to put my money on the table, is it going to happen or is it not going to happen? At this point, I have to say, all of the evidence says it's going to happen.
Well, the corrupts can obviously see that because they tried to assassinate Kadhimi.
Right.
So he's aware of that, and who knows, maybe there was an inside job. And needless to say, two questions, and I'll let you go. You'd mentioned the CRUT in as part of one of the your package. The CRUT is deferred. So if you put your money in the CRUT before it revalues, that money is deferred.
No, you misunderstood me. This is not a CRUT.
No, I realize yours is not a CRUT, but you
can create
a CRUT within your trust. You said that was one of the trusts you could create.
I believe my answer was I've got to defer to the attorney. As a matter of fact, I'm going to write that down.
Okay, well, I've talked to other people regarding the CRUT. And anything you put in a CRUT before it revalues whatever the value of it is, you do not have to pay taxes on that money until you
take it out. The reason I got to check it out is most CRUTs require that you don't have a quote-unquote settlor, you have a managing group. I'm going to have to check that out. You're right.
Okay,
CRUT outside of our trust, that might be the way it operates. Whether
the point I was simply trying to make is with a charitable remainder trust, obviously you leave whatever you don't use on the table. I don't know if that can go to family members as the remainder, or it has to go directly to the government. But what IRS guideline does the CRUT follow to be deferred until you take that money out?
My understanding is that until you pull that out of the trust, although you just did that, you're right, it's deferred. However, you refer to charitable remainder trust. That works a little differently. A CRUT and a charitable remainder trust are not the same thing.
Oh, I thought they were. Forgive me.
Let me explain how a charitable remainder trust works and why it's one of the things that we're going to talk to people about. Some of the people that have established trust with us want to protect their wealth, but at present they don't. They're not married, or they don't have children, or they don't have anyone they want to leave money to, but they're involved in a church or some philanthropic group. By establishing a charitable remainder trust, and let's just make it simple. You do your exchange, you got $5 million, and you put it into a charitable remainder trust. Upon your death, that $5 million will then go to whatever charity or charities you want it to go to. But during your lifetime, all of the income generated from that $5 million is tax-free to you. Okay?
As long as it's in the trust.
There are ways to work this.
And if you take it out of the trust, it's going to be taxed.
No, you don't. Well, yeah, the dividends and interest would be taxed ordinarily, but not if it's a charitable remainder trust.
Okay.
Dividends and interest is always taxed unless it's in a charitable remainder trust, in which case it's tax-free.
So the principal won't be taxed because as long as that earns in the trust without exposing that or out pulling that money out, that money is not taxed. But the minute you pull out any funds from that trust, that will be taxed as ordinary income.
Dividends and interest are always taxed. The principal, even if it's profit from the exchange, is not taxed if it remains in trust. Okay.
Correct.
The CRUT, you have the tax deferral. But with the charitable remainder trust, the corpus will go to the charity upon your demise, but all of the earnings during your lifetime are yours tax-free.
Interesting. All right. Well, I want to learn more about that, so maybe you can expand on that next week. I won't take all your time. I know there's others.
Well, let me put it to you this way. When the reinstitution happens, then, of course, these are specifically the thing, and the attorneys will be on the calls, too. We'll deal with all of that. Right now, we're still in the quote-unquote pseudo-marketing phase because we haven't reinstituted yet. But once it reinstitutes, we're not marketing the trust anymore. We're just going to serve our existing clients, which involves conversations like this.
Okay. All right, fair enough. One last question. I'll let you go. You mentioned one thing that could occur that Biden, Brandon, whatever you want to call that idiot, could come up with any kind of tax he could to rob us of what we've been waiting for all this time, one of which was an annuitization if you exchange those funds. If that were the case, would it not be a non-taxable event if it's annuitized?
Okay, first of all of the things I'm saying there, they're hypotheticals based on my witnessing how this guy operates. Let me reiterate again. theoretically, he could rescind Executive Order 13303, which allows us to participate, but I don't think he could, on a post facto basis, confiscate what we have now. I guess he could grandfather it. I don't know how that would work. Now, the other issue is with regard to the taxing and the annuitization and all of that, that would require legislation. So while it's possible, I don't think it's likely, because with every passing day, the Democrats are losing ground. They're trying to do as much damage as they can because they know they're done at the midterms. Although this new variant, my prediction is all of a sudden we're going to have this mail-in ballot push because of this terrible, horrible variant,
What's ironic is that no one could see that going in except for the Republicans. We knew this was going to happen. We knew it was going to happen.
Well,
so
the Democrats
our
do
point,
it. They like it.
Now we all have to suffer because of it.
First of all, when I say Democrat and Republican, I'm not talking about all Democrats. I'm talking about the Democratic leadership and the Democratic Party. There are a lot of Democrats that are appalled of what's going on, and unfortunately, there's a fair number of Republicans that are okay with it. So I'm not, drawing a line of demarcation and saying Republicans good, Democrats bad. I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is the Democrats run everything right now, and they're running it into the ground. And one of the things I'm concerned about is how to separate us from this wealth. I don't think they can do that because a substantial number of these denarians, including politicians, are Democrats. So I don't see that. But I really think the one thing, dark horse, that's working in our advantage, and that once again we're going to have to wait for the reinstitution, is Section 643B of the IRS Code. Okay, Section 98082 and Publication 525 refer to the profit from the exchange as cap gain. How can it be a cap gain if it's not a capital asset? And the sale or exchange of a capital asset within an irrevocable trust is tax deferred. That's what the IRS says. But once again, I am not selling that as finite. I'm saying that we're going to go to the IRS and ask them to confirm what it says. Now, if they're going to come up with some cockeyed explanation why it doesn't say what it says, then this will end up in the courts. But I refer anyone, don't take my word for it. Go to 988E2 and 643B of the IRS code and read it for yourself. It's right there.
Okay. All right. All right, Jim, I'll let you go with that. If you would kindly check into the website as to follow up on these conferences,
I've got the notation down here. I'm also going to check into the incorporating the CRUT within our package. I don't think that's possible, but I'll ask.
Thank you for your time.
Yes, sir. Take care, Clay. Our next caller is area code 808. That's 808.
Hi, Jim.
Daisy, right?
Yes.
I just know your voice. I haven't spoken to you in a year, but I recognize your voice.
I know. I maybe this is not a question for now, but is there can you make changes to like, I guess it's the ownership of the trust?
The what of the trust?
I know we can change trustees, but the people who set up the trust, can we change?
You mean the settlers?
Go ahead.
Well,
that's the one. Settlers.
Well, all the settlers would have to agree, and in order to do that, and it would probably require rewriting the trust, which wouldn't cost that much. But if you have two settlers and you want only one, or you want two settlers and you want two separate trusts, one for each settler, then you're going to have to rewrite the trusts. But that can be done. The terms of the trust can be done. You can change the trustee. All of that's within your purview.
Okay, now, do I have to do that before this thing rebels, or can that be done? Okay, go ahead.
I don't want to get into personal stuff here. Send me an email and tell me exactly who the settlers are and what you're contemplating, and then I can get back to you and give you your options.
Okay, all right.
Because I don't want to get into any names or anything.
No, I that's why I said I don't know if this was for here or if, but it kind of came up as a question.
Well, send me an email, and I'll get right back to you.
Okay. Thanks, Jim.
Okay, Daisy. Take care. Bye-bye. Okay, our next caller is area code 405. That's 405. Go ahead.
Hi, Jim. This is Doug in Oklahoma City.
Doug, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well. Wishing this thing was over, but it's not, so we'll just go from here.
Tell me about it.
All right, first question I have, you mentioned about the checking accounts established at the bank during the time of the exchange. There have been opinions that it would be best to do that now to eliminate confusion later, or is there any advantage of waiting, or should it be done now?
Well, it's probably easy to set one up now, but let's say you go to Bank A and set up an account, and you end up doing your exchange in Bank B, and now Bank B wants to know where else you have accounts, and then you're having an odd conversation. But, I mean,
go ahead.
We've advised people not to do it, but you're certainly welcome to do it with that caveat.
The difference would be that Bank A versus Bank B would be one of the prime banks that would be carrying out the exchange versus a secondary or a second-tier bank, perhaps. Is that correct?
Well, the point is if you go to any bank to do the exchange and you have an account at any other bank, whatever tier it is, they're going to ask about that. Then they're going to ask, you know, they could query it. That's why we don't fund the trust. When you go to the bank, you have a completely empty trust. The only thing you've got are assigned currencies. That minimizes the questions. The banks don't like the fact that you don't have, quote-unquote, their trust. So we're trying to make this as easy as possible. We also have some banks, when people have gone to the bank, said, well, this is a business trust. We don't do business trusts. Well, we have a special letter that everyone will receive that they can take with them to the bank that specifically explains why this is not a business trust. So,
all right.
You know, those are some of the issues. So
that letter will come immediately after the reinstatement.
When we reinstate, that letter will go on our email list, and it'll be available to everyone, and we'll mention it on our call as well. Not that the bank will bring it up, but in the problem is, the honest truth is the guy at the bank doing the exchange, he doesn't know anything about trust, and most of the lawyers don't know that much about them. Banks deal with the revocable trust. It's a completely different animal. That's a horse and buggy, and you're walking in there with the Jaguar, you know, and they don't know what they're looking at.
I understand that. By virtue of the fact that a member of our family did it, and it took 3 weeks for the bank to determine what they were going to do, and that was very surprising to all of us, since it was, you know, somewhat close to a month before they would concur that they would allow the bank account to be established. I thought that was strange.
Will simplify that is in the same situation you're sitting there going, I have 10 million dinar. If you don't set this trust bank account up, by the time I count to 10, I'm going to another bank. That's how you deal with them.
Okay.
I hate to be that way about it. I've dealt with banks for 40 years, and unfortunately, sometimes the only thing that works is a smack in the mouth. That's why we're trying to get as much information together to give you to go to the bank once the reinstitution happens. But we won't be able to get some of that information until the reinstitution, which is why we said don't go to the bank.
I understand, and I know that it's going to be a whirlwind when this if and when this happens. And so, you know, the most that we can do to mitigate the whirlwind, the better. Second question: passing of the budget. I think Clay touched on this. You know, in years past, unfortunately, the budget has languished for months beyond March. And so, you know, I'm hoping that that's not the issue, but he's right that, you know, we have a budgetary process in Iraq that, you know, is not a finite date like it is for us, like October 1st or something like that in our country. So
yeah, because we're doing things so well here. Oh my God.
Oh no. But the point is that everybody knows what the budget date is for the U.S. government. It just seems like it's such a floating number for Iraq.
Well, the difference now, I think, is that they've put so many contracts in place that were going to require payment with an international currency that all of the things they've done, they've just shot themselves. They can't do anything. You know, it's like signing a contract to purchase a car, and there's no money in the. You wrote a check, and now there's no money in the bank. So you got to run and make sure there's money to cover that check. So that, you know, you can't go into these agreements with Saudi Arabia, with the United States, with Turkey, and all these other countries to do things, and then not be able to pay them. They don't have sufficient U.S. dollar reserve currency to pay out those contracts and keep the country afloat. The only option that exists at this point. It's the exchange rate, or they're just going to go into a rabbit hole for another year, and I just don't see how they survive that.
Okay, and because you mentioned that they would have to pay them with an international currency, which the U.S. dollar is, and they're getting paid in U.S. dollars for the oil they sell, so you don't think that that's sufficient to accomplish what they need to do to settle these accounts?
It probably could be on the short term only because of the price of a barrel of oil exceeds the $50 that is estimated to balance the budget. So the difference between the 50 and this roughly 71, that's $21 a barrel. That's their play money. But I don't see how that's enough to do all the things they want to do domestically and to be able to fund all of the other contracts to rebuild the infrastructure, the electric grid, they're even talking about residential communities and all that. Well, they can't do any of that with the helicopter money. They've got a reval.
Right. They don't have. Yeah. They can't print their own, unfortunately, like we do. Okay. So second to the last one, we had talked about the potential for this happening before the end of this quarter. You know, obviously, we're the first day of December, and for the advantage of taxation. I would hate to say that we have to postpone this for another month, but I think that it would be best. And I would imagine that anybody in government that has any of these dinars would concur. And if they have any pressure on Iraq, that they would make sure that this didn't happen until sometime in January, or at least, correct?
If they asked me, hey, Jim, when do you want this to happen? I'd say January 5th, 2022. Just don't even go there now. Just, you know, you had
right.
11 months, you didn't do it. Just wait till January. And then we don't have to worry about Uncle Sam until April 15th.
Right.
If it happens anytime this month, we got January 15th. And with the bunch that's in there now, I just don't trust them. Let me put it to you this way. Let's say they said, you know what, this is going to happen and you're not going to stop it. So the Biden administration says, okay, reval on December 31st. And the banks can't do any exchanges until January 15th. I mean, that's kind of crap that I expect from this bunch. So, you know, that's what it is. So I'll give you till December. If it happens before December 10th, I'll roll with it. But once we get anywhere near the middle of the month, no way.
Very good. Well, yeah, one last thing. You said that from the perspective of what you think Iraq has to accomplish, that everything is done, I don't think that is figuring in the Biden factor. And
that's
what
the
I mean,
X factor that I refer to. That's the X
pardon
factor.
Me? Yeah, the X
factor.
I don't think
X factor.
The X factor that we used to always think about is some goofy aspect of what's happening in Iraq. But the X factor now is Biden, and well, not Biden, but the people who control Biden.
Right.
And can't think past, you know, tomorrow. And that's my last concern, is that they're going to throw something in there that is completely out in left field. I don't know. I guess it's more of a common question.
Well, the only solace we can have in that is a lot of Democrats are denarians, and they screw with us, they screw with themselves, because they'll get clawed back. There's no way they're going to get away with saying, you know, like, well, you know, the Congress has exempted itself from a vaccine mandate. Well, they're not going to be able to pull it with this. She's not going to fly. I don't even think they're that stupid, you know. So, like I said, if this doesn't happen like in the next week, let's just push it to January, and then we can all, you know, well, it'll be done in the same manner, you know. It will be completely nuts. I mean, everyone can just write Christmas off. They're going to be with their accountants and their lawyers trying to figure out how to make sure we deal with this tax issue and, you know, the whole nine yards. So let's just, you know, for my money, I want to see it in January at this point.
So do I. I mean, really, I mean, it's been such a long time anyway. We just get through the holidays and then
right.
we trade on what might happen next year. I would sure hate this thing delayed because the Iraqis couldn't agree on a budget, but we'll see what happens.
Well, there can't, you know, it's a lot easier to agree on a budget when you're running a surplus. All right.
Yes.
Because it's not like I'll give up this, but you got to give up that. None of that's going on. So, like I said, you know, the stars are aligned here. It's going to take a real moron to screw it up at this point.
Really? I thought we elected a moron.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll be charitable because some of our denarians are Democrats. But I mean, I deal in truth. I don't deal in, you know, emotion and histrionics and all that. To me, Biden is like Mueller. Mueller was some old, seemingly harmless old fossil that they put out front. Meanwhile, they had all of their guys in the background just, you know, doing whatever they wanted to do. And my fear is that, you know, Biden is just taking orders. I can't imagine how many times he said, I've been instructed to, and I stand up and scream at the TV, there's 20 of you in there, and not one journalist is going to say, excuse me, sir, who instructed you to? You're the president.
I know.
So that always, that's what worries me, you know. It's what we don't see, that's what the X factor is. It's us in this country, it's Iraq, it's China, it's Iran, you know. It's these variants and the central bankers that are involved in this, you know, global control. There's a lot of things floating around, and they're just people out there don't want us to have it, you know. And right now, I think they're losing. And let's just hope, you know, we can get this done.
Well, that's a very I didn't have that question in my mind until you mentioned that. You know, 2 days ago there was a report that was published by the Minister of Defense of Israel, and openly he says, we are currently preparing for war with Iran. I mean, out
right.
and out, full-on statement. Observations of Air Force training exercises that are in the exponential mode right now over the north, that would be the northeast of Israel. So from that,
We've always known that Israel would not allow them to have a nuclear weapon, and I think their uranium, weapons-grade uranium, they're saying is going to be done within 2 months. So that, I don't think they need to have a war. I'm hopeful that the cooler heads are going to prevail. The AIEA is going to get in there and tell Iran, you know what, you know, you're not going to win a war. Now, you know, Ahmadinejad, remember him? He was the previous prime minister of Iran. And he was specifically asked about this years ago. He said, what's going to happen if you get into a war with Israel that you can't win? And he, without even batting an eye, his response was, if that be the will of Allah, so be it. So
right.
we're dealing with these 12 imamers, and that's the scary part. Of course, once again, Biden, you know, he just, oh, my God. I wouldn't send him to pick up the pizza. I mean, it's just, it's scary. It's really scary. But, you know, that's where we are.
Economics always backs away from discord, always. And so from that perspective, if this were to happen, because they're talking about having the nuclear capability within 30 days. If that happens and there is some significant upheaval in the Middle East, opinion only about, you know, how can Iraq go forward when everybody else around them is in a mess? And, you know, in order to get weapons to Syria, they have to drive them through Iraq. And so if they don't disallow that, I mean, I just don't see how the harmony.
They'll take a circuitous route if they have to. But, you know, it's just so annoying. Biden gets in there and he starts, you know, laying down for these people. And now we're in this position. They criticize Trump. What did Trump do? Trump went to the Iranians and said, get your terrorists out of Iraq or I'll kill them, and he did. He said, if you do anything out there, if an American so much as catches a cold, I'll take out one of your five oil fields, you know, and that which represents almost all of their revenue. He put international sanctions on them and went out of the deal. And by the way, that deal, the Iran nuke deal, was never ratified by the Senate. It was a piece of paper between Obama and Kerry. What's his?
Yeah, Kerry.
Kerry his name slips out of my mind. The leader in Iraq at the time, but he did. That's exactly what he did. Everything economically, the way he dealt with China, so I'm just slap a tariff on everything. You know, he dealt with it economically. He was drawing down in Afghanistan, but he was going to leave certain things in place. Biden gets in there and just pulls the military out, leaves the Americans there, and the people that, I mean, they're still stuck there. You know,
right.
So the way they get that off the front page is they create another problem somewhere else. I mean, and what's most annoying is people can't see it. They just can't see it. So what has to happen? Does someone have to come kick your front door down, you know, and drag you off? I mean, what has to happen before you figure out what's going on here?
Well, it's the short term.
Don't get me going because I got other calls.
Thank you so much. I appreciate
okay.
it. And thank you for going through the question answer. Take care. Bye-bye.
Sure. Take care, Doug. Bye-bye. All right. We got someone come back on the call here. We got that's area code 208. Hello? 208?
Yeah. Hi, Jim. Sorry. Want to ask one last question.
Sure.
Probably impossible to come up with a firm answer, but, you know, once the dinar revalues, how long of a window would you guess that we will have collectively to take our, you know, dinar to a bank to get the revaluation? I mean, are we talking 90 days, you think, or 6 months, or...
I don't know that there will be any limit. The limit we have domestically is the tax issue. Now, for example, let's say the dinar revalues on December 10th, okay, for a buck. Let's keep it simple, for a buck, all right? Well, taxes would be due on January 15th. You have to exchange the currency, or at least enough to pay the tax, by January 15th. So Kuwait was different. Kuwait, you had to physically go to Kuwait, and you had 90 days to do the exchange. So our group had to literally hire somebody to go to Kuwait to do the exchange. We had to pay their travel expenses plus 15% of the gain, which was a lot, but who wanted to get on a plane and go to Kuwait? And you also had to fill out a FinCEN form because you were taking currency out of the country that was worth more than $10,000, so it was really complicated. The fact that we can go to a bank makes it a lot easier. It's just that there's a whole lot we don't yet know, and we'll get a lot more information once it reinstitutes. But the problem we have here is, that's why I just said on the previous call, at this point, let's just wait till January. No matter what the exchange rate is, no matter what we get for it, no taxes are due until April 15th. So we have time to confirm the deferral if you're in a trust. We have time to hold the currency if it revalues incrementally, all of those factors.
Right. Thank you very much, Jim. Appreciate your time.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye. Well, that was our last call for this afternoon. We've been on for about an hour and a half, which is the longest call I've probably done this year. I'm glad to kind of get back in the saddle here and discuss all of this with you. I enjoy our Q&A. Those of you, again, calling in for the first time and will be listening to the replay, if the things we've discussed here are of interest, I strongly suggest you contact us to get our initial no-obligation trust package. It has a lot of information about us, about Trusts Unlimited, about the revaluation of these currencies. You can review the package. Contact us if you have any questions. There will be no consultation fee. If you decide to proceed, everything you need is included in the initial package. Again, you can go to our website, which is trusts with an S, unlimitedllc.com. Our email address is trusts with an S, unlimitedllc@gmail.com. And our phone service is 307-274-4122. Our next call will be, of course, next Wednesday. Certainly, if something of a dramatic nature were to happen between now and then, we'll try to get out an emergency email and schedule an emergency conference call. But failing that, we'll be back next week, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. Thanks for listening, everyone, and have a great week. Bye-bye.